This is Stephen Gregory. I'm sitting with Werner Danhauser, visiting him just outside Collegeville, Pennsylvania. Hello, Werner. Thanks for having me.
Hello, Steve. Nice to see you.
You studied with Leo Strauss soon after he came to the University of Chicago. Is that right?
I don't know when he came to Chicago.
1949.
No, I didn't arrive in Chicago till 55 or 56.
Oh, a long time.
Yeah.
So did you come to Chicago to study with Strauss? Did you know about him before you came?
Well, first of all, I knew where I was raised in Cleveland, especially young Jewish intellectuals. We all looked to Chicago rather than Harvard or Columbia or Yale. And I'd applied there 3 times already, and I was admitted each time, but no fellowships. So I went to other worthy schools. But in the meantime, I heard of Strauss. Well, first I heard of Hutchins, and then I heard of Strauss. And then I was in Europe on a Fulbright, and I decided to give Chicago one more chance. And I got a very lavish fellowship to the Committee on Social Thought, which was where I wanted to go, because you could study with Strauss and evade a lot of requirements that way.
So you came to the committee in 1955.
I think it's 56 now.
56. Okay. And what was your first experience with Strauss?
I came from the new school indirectly. There was a Wednesday night, I believe it was called the Graduate Seminar, and he came there already from Chicago, and he lectured on Thucydides, whom I had not read on at that time. I didn't think he was an unusually excellent lecturer, but then he was questioned by the graduate faculty, and I was amazed both at his friendliness and the fact that I thought he was the most alert mind, and that he knew more about Thucydides than anyone in the world, though I'd never read him.
So you heard Strauss lecture on Thucydides, and then soon after you came to the committee.
After I came to the committee, recommended by Howard White of the New School.
Right.
And I went to his office, and Howard had written him about me, and he said, hoped I liked it, and if I only took one course, I should come to his Hobbes seminar, whom I also had not read. That's the one I signed up for.
So you had a letter of introduction from Howard White, and you went to Strauss's office and met with him.
Yeah.
And how was he in your first meeting?
He was perfectly cordial and sweet. And he was very busy because it was registration week. But he gave an unhurried air and the atmosphere of someone who enjoyed being a teacher.
And how was the Hobbes course?
I hate to be, platitudinous. It was an eye-opener. I had known nothing about Hobbes, except that he was, the wicked lock. And I just sort of started by, it's a good question why we're reading Hobbes. And then he led into it. And I'll first describe what the requirements were. You had to write a 7-page paper because long experience had taught him that that's what 20 minutes took. And I was amazed at how light the requirements were. That was, if I remember correctly, didn't even have to hand in the things. And the paper, they just criticized you afterwards.
You didn't turn the paper in, you gave it in class.
You gave it in class. And then he commented on the paper and commented on each paper was on a certain section of the text. And in a few of his courses, but I don't think in this one there was a final, but it was always a very routine question, like, what are the main themes of the Leviathan? And that was it. And you could say what you wanted to.
What kind of feedback did he give when you gave your paper in class or others did? He had not had a chance to read the paper beforehand.
No. I just said certain things, like I was wrong in my discussion of sin, which played a role, but otherwise it was, I believe, to use the word alert. And afterwards, as he saw me leave, he smiled and said, Howard White was right about you. I was in heaven.
Did he often compliment students?
No, they would have lost a value. No, he was never mean. The meanest thing in my many years that I have ever heard him say was, we will now turn to a coherent discussion of the text. But otherwise, sometimes he would just say something like, thank you very much. I must boast once more, then hit me. I really came to my own the second quarter, which was Thucydides, and I gave the paper. And he didn't say anything for a while, but made one of his elaborate and unintelligible charts on the wall. And he suddenly turned around and said, by the way, that was excellent. So I was in heaven again.
How many courses did you end up taking or sitting in on with him? How long did you have a chance to attend his courses?
A long time. I belonged to the generation when it was considered bad manners to do your PhD quickly. So I took 20 years. But the courses by him were something you just dropped in on long after nobody bothered about credits or anything. You just wanted to learn something or to hear what the course was about.
And how was Strauss as a teacher? What stood out to you about him as a teacher?
One of the things that came to mind immediately is, like many of my friends who also studied with him, I've also noticed is how different he was as a teacher than we ourselves became. Like others and me, we were certainly not averse to using histrionic effects, raising our voices and getting angry and sort of sparring a bit maliciously with our students. But he was much more quiet and gentle, and he just managed to convey the worth and the love of what we were doing. And he was, again to repeat, he was kind, by which I mean I wouldn't call him loving, and he was rather formal with students. And he never called any of us by our first names. That would have been unthinkable, except in the case of Larry Burns. I don't know the story behind that. But he also seemed genuinely interested, and he was very popular. And also, you came to him for something, and he was unhurried, like usually with an academic question. And he'd say, you know, smiling, you have your nerve asking me about that. I last read it 40 years ago, so you'll be at the mercy of my bad memory and something. And then he would sort of effortlessly say the most astonishing things about it. And that's it.
I've heard that through the 50s, at least, that he really poured himself into his teaching. His classes would often go long over time, and he would take questions until people no longer had questions to ask.
That's right, yes, I heard that, and I have even seen him, as I'm sure others have, when the only reason he left is Mrs. Strauss came to fetch him. I mean, he would give you a fair warning, and he said, well, class is now over, but if anyone has any questions, shoot. And that was it.
Why do you think he was pouring so much energy into his teaching? You know, these sessions apparently last 3 or 4 hours sometimes.
Yes, they did. Well, this is in no way, this is a terribly reductionist, but the atmosphere in Convergys, he was having a good time, and that he really, it made him happy, and that made us happy. There was a lot of joking and a lot of laughter in his class, and he was quite respectful of students. I remember to go back to the Hobbes course, where it took me a long time to, I used to be retiring and quiet. you know, to ask a question, because, you know, you're never sure it's not a stupid question. But to my amazement, he said, "That's a very difficult point you raise." And then he had a habit that was like super involvement. He would suddenly be in front of your desk, having walked up, and address you personally. And as usual, I froze, and after 5 minutes, I no longer knew quite what he was talking about. But I was hugely impressed. And this is for the first time, you know, sort of things opened up. But then at the end, he said, "That's not quite a correct answer, but it'll have to do." And it wasn't fake modesty. It was him judging himself.
Did you have the sense when you attended his class that he was paying attention to the individual students and understood what their own dispositions were towards what he was teaching? That if a student asked a question, that he was responding not in a kind of formulaic way, but to what that particular student was really getting at?
Yes, I mean, my God, rapport. He was never at all, you know, many teachers, including me probably, you get a feeling this is pretentious, or this is a showpiece shtick or something. You know, it was always addressed to you and your question.
How do you think he saw his role as a teacher?
I think he had the students of so many persuasions or shades of opinion or something. Mm-hmm. He just wanted you to, I guess deep down, he really wanted you to learn how to read. And that meant to be, I hope, deeply involved with a book. That sort of try to sit inside of it. You know, as Joe Cropsey used to say, "You don't learn about these books, you learn from them." Mm-hmm. And that impressed me. I think he was open to a wide variety of choices by his students.
It was observed at the Strauss Center's conference last weekend that he thought it was good to start students with Aristotle's Politics or Aristotle's Ethics, but he taught the Politics most frequently. This is an unfair question, but why do you think he preferred to start with and keep returning to the Politics?
I give it very simplistic. I think he really liked that book. Mm-hmm. That was an odd choice. You'll notice I started with Hobbes's Leviathan. But he really liked the book, but what made it odd and puzzling, in a way of forbidding text. Mm-hmm. Not a page of it reads like a novel, and then there's all the problems of are the pieces really in the right order, and so forth. And some of it is very dry. But he rammed it home to us. Though now that you ask me this question, if I had been him, or if he had asked me what to start with, I would counsel him to say the Ethics, because I'm no way unique with me. I think the Ethics you took to very quickly, especially with his gentle guidance. That's a book we really learned to love much more quickly than the Politics.
In a letter to Klein in 1949, I'm not sure if this is after his appointment or after he knew of his appointment to Chicago, he complained to Klein that he needed to give students a political teaching. And
he needed what?
He needed to give students a political teaching, that students wanted a political teaching, and so he had to come up with one. Did you have the sense that there was a teaching in his courses?
No. I think if you got time for an anecdote about another Straussian.
We have lots of time.
They have. 2 days ago, I talked to Arthur Melzer, who is now, after many years, close to finishing a book on esotericism in Strauss. And he said he was dealing with the issue of whether Strauss had a political teaching. And Arthur has taught everything under the sun at Michigan State. He was impressed that he, Strauss, was far less political than he, Arthur. That he never, or very rarely, addressed himself to a today's political, you know, a current political things. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's correct. Or as we used to say, you know, Ann Landers is quoted 10 times as often as Plato.
That is a striking thing about his courses. When you look at the transcripts, the number of times that he refers to not big political figures, but simply figures who were in the news. Grace Kelly.
Oh, yeah?
Well, I doubt she appears more than once, but that seemed to be an important part of his teaching, just the way he taught, I mean, to bring up the things that were happening on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Do you think he had any particular hopes for his teaching students?
I think he did develop them. He didn't say something hugely self-serving. I think he was very lucky in his students, and he kept liking us. And it gave him satisfaction. You know, not everyone, certainly. I could mention some scoundrels, but will seal my lips. But that they turned out well. Or at least, you know, that what they learned somehow made them fuller and happier.
So if he had an end in view, it was simply having students who were able to study political philosophy in a serious way and became, as you say, fuller and happier for doing so.
Yeah. And a completely non-doctrinaire. I mean, let's just say as a doctoral student, I had several crises. But the early ones were all, I thought Nietzsche was right at the beginning. And he seemed slightly bored, by the way, what this has. You know, like, well, what else would you think at your stage now? And, you know, the question, was Nietzsche right, was certainly a necessary question to deal with. And with Nietzsche, that can be very painful, unless you like fascists.
He taught Nietzsche at Chicago perhaps 3 or 4 times. There were 2 courses on Nietzsche. And then he included Nietzsche in reading lists 1 or 2 other times. Of course, as a young man, Strauss was, like you, very interested in Nietzsche. In his teaching, did Nietzsche come up as a particular alternative that he felt students had to meet and address?
I'd like to think so. I don't really. I mean, I think they're just, for thinking of the way I think he thinks, to plagiarize from Montaigne. There are a lot of different roads to the same end. I certainly think that, you know, some of the functions could be fulfilled by Marx if you were deep in the 19th century and had some feelings or had read some of the novels of Balzac or Stendhal or practically everything else. That there's something, or Flaubert, seedy about the bourgeoisie.
And that's a prejudice that Strauss never himself seemed to entertain.
Yeah, though I think, ultimately I think his hero was Goethe, as far as the modern's concerned. Goethe certainly knew everything that was wrong with the bourgeoisie. That's why so many wild women in the text and so on. But he gave things due. And the road, that's an interesting question. It works both ways historically. I think Goethe is, in a way, puts Nietzsche to shame. But in the same, in the other direction, I think Nietzsche's a very powerful critic of Goethe. He never understood the Greeks. He never understood, well, as in Greek tragedies, too.
There were several students of Strauss who were registered with the Committee on Social Thought. Did you see any difference between the social thought students who were studying with Strauss and the political science students?
No. I consider that to our credit as students. That simply didn't matter. I mean, now that I think back of it, there were majors in Chinese or in Jewish studies or all sorts of things. I don't think we pay too much attention to them. Now that I'm very old, sometimes a question comes up and I simply don't remember whether so-and-so studied political science or on the committee. Though I suspect that there was more snootiness on the committee.
Were there any institutional obstacles to your studying with Strauss since you were not in the political science department?
No.
Yeah.
It would have been the other way, because the man who subsidized me, who controlled the fellowships, was Hayek. Hayek certainly knew that there was nothing, so to speak, in common between him and Strauss. As far as I know, they didn't really know each other very well. But Hayek was very, old-fashioned, Austrian, courtly. And it didn't matter to him at all that I was plainly on the committee, known as a Strauss student, and none of the others. I mean, people today have been asked again and again, sir, how could you be both Green's student and Strauss's student? But it just wasn't a problem, even though we all knew that Green had called Strauss a lunatic in the Tribune.
Right. Well, didn't Green look upon Strauss as a close friend for some time?
They were friendly. I think they liked each other, though.
Yeah.
You know, Straussianism can have excesses. So once I took a course with Green that he taught at the Downtown Center. It was on some Shakespeare plays. And Green was excellent at teaching Shakespeare. But then I got, I had survived his dislike of me some, and I'd gotten enough nerve. So I raised my hand at something and found myself, I can't even remember the play, giving a very elaborate and practically wrong, I think, but definitely Straussian reading of a certain section. And he looked bemused. And then he said, Werner, do you really believe all that nonsense? That was a Green. Well, I had wits enough to say, not when you put it like that.
Was Strauss on your dissertation committee?
Yes, he was.
Did he give you feedback on the dissertation?
He did something better than that. He read it very, very promptly.
Yes.
And wrote me back a very nice letter saying it was good. He had the following, I don't know, maybe half a dozen suggestions. And then came saving in. These are all trivial. Dispose of them as you wish. So that's what I call an ideal dissertation reader.
Prompt with detailed feedback that he gives you permission to ignore.
Yes.
And is that how you supervise dissertations?
No, I didn't live up to it.
Strauss was an emigre. How did he view his American students as Americans? What did he think of his American students compared to the European students he might have had if he'd been able to remain in Germany?
Well, I think he liked American students. I think he really liked America, though it's a moot point. He may have liked England slightly better, because my memory of the letters is that when he first came to England, he sort of fell in love with the English. Now, that may have something to do with this was early Hitler times, and Britain was like the last remaining hope. I don't think he ever fell in love with America, but he appreciated it.
What did he appreciate in the American qualities of his students, if anything?
I think their good-naturedness. I think that American students are less sour than students of most countries. Or sweet, if you want to use an imprecise word.
Is there such a thing as a Straussian?
Yes.
What is it?
Well, you're looking at one.
Okay. What is a Straussian?
Someone who is moving in the direction of thinking that Leo Strauss was right. that his way of looking at things is better than any other teacher that's around.
During his lifetime, he had the chance to observe that there were people who called themselves Straussians and who were called Straussians by others. There were famous controversies about Straussians while he was still alive. Do you think he was pleased to see that there were people called Straussians or indifferent or?
No, I think he was pleased. I'm filled with the warm memory that he really liked us. And with us, there is a kind of inner circle. We're the ones who, when we're called Straussians, we like it, or it's like a badge of honor. And others don't. But I remember, you know, when we used to gossip, a very important virtue, I don't think anyone felt embarrassed in front of him to call himself a Straussian. It was just a term with pretty fair identification record.
In addition to his teaching at the University of Chicago, Strauss gave a remarkable series of lectures at Hillel House on Jewish topics. Did his being a Jew feature into his teaching, the way that he taught, the outlook that he had?
Oh, yes, indeed. But, I mean, there may be a tribal sense when, like, a deeply committed Jew. I tend to think everyone I like is Jewish. Secretly, somehow, in some mysterious way. But this is a complicated question, which is not always easy to explain. But here was a man who only very rarely went to synagogue. And he certainly, after a while, never met Jewish ritual obligation or the Jewish dietary laws. But he was very, very deeply Jewish. And the Hillel House is there he conveyed it. I mean, he was sort of not giving away any inner secret. Strauss was a stingy man, his faults, and he was certainly not in love with giving lectures without a compensation. He would rather have been paid. But of course he would do almost anything for Hillel, it seemed like. One lecture, I think by no means his best, captured in the title, Why We Remain Jews. I just took that for granted. There, if I can just diverge a minute, I mean, since I'm Jewish myself, you wouldn't have guessed. There's a number of us, he turned into better Jews by the simple route that he was in no way condescending to the Jewish tradition. I certainly came to the University of Chicago. Those old books, they're antiquarian. But all you have to do, if you ever were lucky enough, is listen to him on Maimonides. And there was simply not a bit of condescension or anything. And he took that very seriously. And he taught us to take it very seriously. Maybe we, that is, we Jews.
Yeah.
Maybe we never took St. Thomas seriously enough. It's possible. Or Augustine. But we did learn the Jewish thing. And there was in addition, he was without condescension within Jewishness. I also happen to be a German Jew. German Jews for hundreds of years were very nasty toward Polish Jews and others, and were very contemptuous of Yiddish as a language. I mean, Hebrew was a language of the streets and everything. There was never any condescension by Strauss or by Scholem toward the Yiddish language, or Strauss was an admirer of Scholem Aleichem. Well, that's another one. German Jews, they'd rather deal with Kafka.
It's remarkable that a few of his students went on to write about Jewish subjects, but Strauss never taught Jewish subjects, apart from those several lectures he gave at Hillel House.
Yeah.
When you had a chance to speak to him...
Part of that is you consider Spinoza as a Jew.
Okay.
Or not.
Fair enough.
Well, we solved that. He's a bad Jew.
When you had a chance to speak to him out of class, was Jewish thought one of the things that would come up in your conversations with him?
Oh, yes. But, some of it indirectly, because we were both German refugees. So the German question and the Jewish question were always rubbing shoulders together. But in addition, one of the reasons Mrs. Strauss liked me, I think, not only because I'm so likable, it's because, like many German Jews, she wanted to talk German to people, which is why in Israel, the German Jews, to a huge extent, kept talking German. There were whole cafes where you couldn't hear anything but German. And Mrs. Strauss would always break into German when she got the least bit excited. And lo and behold, I've even had instances where Strauss, when he was talking fast, knew somewhere that I was a kraut, would break into German for a while. He was also in Jewishness. He liked Israel. And for us, it gives me a warm feeling. One of the most impressive things I know was reading the Riot Act to the National Review in the letter defending Israel. You know, as we said, he practically threatened to cancel his free subscription.
In addition to not teaching Jewish authors, Strauss never taught Goethe, as far as I know, at least at the University of Chicago.
That's as far as I know he didn't, yeah.
Was Goethe something else that you learned from him about, but not in class?
Yeah, not so much. I learned Mrs. Strauss had an amazing knowledge of German literature, especially poetry. She seemed to have read everything. So I learned a lot from her, paid no tuition. But I don't know how reliable is the course count. For example, Nathan only taught me later, after somewhere I raised a Tocqueville question, mm-hmm. that Strauss never gave a course on Tocqueville. And of course, among his students, Tocqueville's a favorite subject. So I don't know what silence means exactly. Being Straussian, of course, I think it means a lot.
After you left Chicago, you kept in touch with Strauss?
Yes.
What kind of relations did he have with his former students? I mean, was he someone that you would correspond with, or?
Oh, yes. After I left, we corresponded irregularly. But then, whenever I was in Chicago or he was in New York, I mean, by no means just me, but we would touch base so that, he came to lecture for commentary. And then there was an evening with him that full of rambunctious argument. And when at long last I got back to my thesis, I was married with one child. I just needed to touch base with him. So we visited him St. John's in Annapolis. And he was received very warmly, even though I don't think he really loved children a lot. And he got a little nervous when rambunctious Fania kept bumping into him.
Did you think of Strauss as a friend in those days?
No. I mean, because friendship always, and I know what Aristotle said to the contrary, but friendship implies equality. And I never thought of myself as his equal. Or whatever. I always thought of him as my superior.
What made Strauss different in that way from everyone else? I mean, that it may be that none of his students felt that they were his equal, and it may be that...
I don't think that's true, by the way.
All right.
Well, gossip is so far beyond me. But I know students who did think they were his equal. Well, I say it is not even malicious. Stanley Rosen came to mind immediately.
What do you think made the difference between Strauss and others? He stood head and shoulders above most of the crowd.
Yes.
What do you think made the difference? What made Strauss different from everyone else?
First answer may sound moronic. I think he's just smarter. I mean, he's just the most powerful mind I ever came close to. That's it.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground. Is there anything you'd like to bring up that we should discuss that we haven't touched on?
No, you have emptied my cup, or whatever the right thing is.
Okay.
I think I've said everything that's worth saying.